We're here with Suzanne Thorpe. Are you formerly from Mercury Rev, currently from Mercury Rev? Well, how do we introduce you?
I am formerly of Mercury Rev. I am not currently involved in that endeavor.
Does that endeavor exist?
It does.
It does still exist.
It does still exist.
As its name, okay.
Yes, as its name. And I believe Jonathan and Grasshopper are working on a new project, and the name escapes me at the moment, but they are working on a new project under a different name with two new collaborators.
But you are busy all up and down the Hudson Valley, I guess, this week or month. But specifically, you've got this project at Manitoga coming up. When is it?
It's on September 30th, and to start at 3 p.m. And
what is it?
What is it? That's a really great question. So I frame this as a sonic meditation, which is an attempt to be less separate about who's performing and who's listening. In essence, I'm encouraging us to think of ourselves as musicers in the event. And I think that idea is at the root of the entire project, actually, is to encourage this idea of, not idea, but the reality, to illuminate the reality of our interconnectedness with our environment and our presence and how that we are actuating and participating at any given time with our environment.
And this is something people need to make a reservation for, is that?
Yes.
So let's get that out of the way first.
Highly advised, actually.
What are all the details, if you want to just give the basic details of Saturday, September 30th at 3 p.m.?
Saturday, September 30th at 3 p.m. There is a rain date for October 1st. I have been keeping a close eye on the weather. And as of now, we're looking at a partly cloudy day. If it were to...
But who knows what hurricane will pop up before
right.
then.
And you know, the whole hurricane situation over, you know, down south has had me on edge for a couple of weeks and will continue to. The rain date is October 1st, but I anticipate that we'll follow through. At this point, I'm anticipating that September 30th will be our day, and 3 p.m. They can go to the Manitoga website. Anyone interested in attending can go to the Manitoga website.
Which is visitmanitoga.org.
Correct. Yes. And reserve tickets there.
And how did the event come about? What did you, where did you get, what was the originating idea, I guess?
Okay. So let me expand a little bit more on what the piece is, and then I can dig into its history a little bit. The piece is a combination of sound walking from participants and sound meditations from participants, and a musicking aspect, which includes four recorder players that are performing in boats in a quarry pool. So Manitoga is a beautiful woodland, they call it a woodland garden, it's the former estate of Russell Wright, who was an industrial designer, and his work was most popular, I believe, in the 40s, 50s, 60s. And he bought this 79 acres of property, now known as Manitoga. And when he purchased it, it was pretty ravaged. The property was quite ravaged by quarrying and foresting. And he set about restoring the property and restoring it in such a way as to encourage the natural growth of whatever plants are indigenous there and whatever wildlife is indigenous to there. And the way that he did that was to follow what he termed a practice of ecological design, in that he observed how the plant life and the animal life behaved, what their patterns of growth were, what conditions they thrived in, survived in, and went about encouraging what was best for this restoration process for the surroundings in the environments. Also in that process, he noticed that there would be certain properties or characteristics of the surroundings that would be emphasized by in certain times of day or certain times of season, and created a number of walks throughout the 80-acre property that are designed to be taken during a particular time or day and or season in which certain characteristics of the surroundings would be emphasized and illuminated. I kind of think of those walks as ragas. So if we're to put this in musical terms, I think of those walks as ragas, and those walks as time-specific or season-specific or day-time-specific. And that they are perfectly tuned. Those walks are perfectly tuned for certain for conditions within a particular time of day or season.
Was he the first person to sort of create walks for specific times of day or seasons, or is
this... I wouldn't say that he would be the first person. I think that that's something that might have been, part of a zeitgeist that may have been occurring during that time period, and I can't ascribe that to him as being the first person, but I know that that was something.
What decade was this that he was creating these?
Well, the woodland, his restoration of the woodlands was over a 40-year time period.
And so it was over many decades.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. So it was many decades of observation on his part, which is very interesting to me as well. He took the time to know.
So he spent a long time watching things before he did pass.
Yeah. Yes, yes. And that time...
I guess listening too.
Yes. And listening and sound was a big part of the construction of the walks that he designed. There's a stream that runs through the property, and he encouraged people to be listening to the stream and its different characteristics at different times of year, listening to how it interacts with the rocks, how their footsteps interact. So there's a lot of shared design principle that I feel with Russell Wright in the construction of this piece. And so the piece itself that I'm presenting on Saturday is similarly site specific, in that I have spent a number of weeks on the property last year, listening to the space, walking the space, sitting in the space, conducting listening exercises and meditations in the space, recording the space to learn more about it, analyze the recordings that I have, and look at the spectral analysis. And, you know, for our lay listeners, that means looking at the frequencies or the sounds and identifying what frequencies are prevalent in the space. And I did that 2 weeks to today, we could say, a year ago, to try to understand how the space behaves and sounds in this time of year. And I constructed the composition that we're going to be performing on Saturday to interact with these characteristics based on the findings that I and the research that I conducted a year ago at this time.
And I'm sure it sounds wildly different at different times of year.
It does.
This is my favorite in the Hudson Valley, my favorite sonic time of year.
Yes.
With the crickets and the cicadas.
Yes.
And the but in the snowy winter, it probably is much quieter.
Much quieter. You would also have different types of reflections. I should mention that reflection is a big part of this piece, hence the title Resonance and Resemblance, right? So the recorder players are going to, as I mentioned, play in this quarry pool. Russell Wright kept a portion of the quarry intact, and a stream is feeding it and has developed a pool within the quarry, and that the performers are going to be on boats in the pool. They're also surrounded about three quarters worth with walls of granite. And so that provides, between the granite and the water, that
there's
provides
four walls, yeah.
Well,
the water being the fourth wall.
Correct.
Reflectively, you know.
Reflectively, yes, yes. That provides a highly reflective surfaces. So, and one of the reasons why I picked the instrument, the recorder, is because it the pitches, the sonorities of that particular instrument reflect well off of surfaces. And my expectation is that in this particular dynamic, in this season, it will create a beautiful chorus with the reflections from the granite, the reflections from the water, and also with the crickets and cicadas surrounding it. So,
and probably most of our listeners know about recorders from playing hot cross buns,
yes,
in elementary school.
Yeah, so there's a certain layman affection for it, right? You know, like everybody has experienced the recorder, and you know, and but to put it into this paradigm, I think, which I like to encourage us all to be playing our nature with in nature. Right, you know, to be interacting, and that gesture is conscious on my part.
I guess it makes it the piece kind of more accessible than if they were playing an oboe or a cello or something that people would have less familiarity with.
Yeah, maybe. I hope so. Yeah.
And who are your performers, and are they playing hot cross buns, or are they improvising, or what are they?
That's a great question. If they play hot cross buns, you know, if they get inspired, then to reach into for and touch their inner, get in touch with their inner 3-year-old or 5-year-old or 7-year-old, I'm happy that they do that. But I think that, okay, so my musicians, great question. The musicians, I'm so happy to be having the musicians that we have. We have Adam Tinkle, who is a woodwind player, saxophone, I believe is his main instrument, an improviser, and also involved in various analog and digital electronic endeavors. He teaches at
Saratoga?
In Skidmore. Yeah. He's based in Saratoga right now at Skidmore. We also have Katie Down. She is a sound artist who focuses on water with a lot of her work. She's also a flute player and also a sound therapist. She works with sound in the therapeutic community. We also have Madison Greenstone, who is a colleague of mine from UCSD. So I should also mention that I'm a PhD candidate at UCSD right now. So I'm here on a leave of absence accomplishment.
I was going to say, yeah, it's fall. aren't you supposed to be in San Diego? Yeah.
No, yes and no. So, but Madison is visiting the East Coast right now, luckily for us. And she's a wonderful improviser, woodwind player as well. And our fourth participant is Anne Guthrie, who is a musician, sound artist, plays the French horn and various other instruments, and is also an acoustician with the company Arup. So she has a bit of an invested interest in this exploration of resonant features of spaces as well. So, and I should also say that all of these players, as well as our sound walk leaders, we have a fantastic group of sound walk leaders, which includes Lisa Kelly. All of our sound walk leaders are deep listening instructors.
Alumni.
Yeah, deep listening alumni. So we have Lisa Kelly, Stephanie Lovelace, and Michelle Nagai as our sound walk leaders. But everybody is invested in what I'm sure many of your listeners are familiar with, the deep listening practice, since part of its home is here in the Hudson Valley and Kingston.
This is what Pauline Oliveros founded, and she was based in Kingston and taught at RPI in Troy until she passed away last year.
Yes.
Her deep listening practice lives on throughout the world.
Yep, absolutely. It's a global practice, and we're lucky to have a very strong contingent here in the Hudson Valley, and I'm very grateful to be connected to all of these wonderful practitioners here and to have them participating in this project.
I'm guessing she kind of partially inspired this project.
Absolutely.
In some ways.
My work with her has inspired a whole host of pieces that are based on listening at this point, and how our bodies interact with our environments. And that started for me. Oh, you know, this is really funny. A student of mine asked me, how did you move from being in a rock band to like Mercury Rev to doing the type of work that you do? And, you know, it's happened in such a long time period. It's hard for me to pinpoint specifics about that. But I would say that my work with Pauline, that was a line of demarcation for sure. When I started to listen, develop a listening practice that expanded my listening abilities and exposed to me that my listening abilities aren't just about the oral, meaning the ear, but are also fully somatic, are about the body. And then I started to recognize how the body interacts with our environments and how important sound is in that interaction. And when we compose pieces with specific environments in mind, it creates an expanded relationship with that place and environment.
And I think careful listeners could see a line from Mercury Rev was kind of interested in sound. You had a song about Opus 40, which is
sure.
the most local equivalent, I guess, of Manitoga,
yeah.
Right?
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I think that listeners that are familiar with the history of Mercury Rev also are familiar with the experimentation, the spirit of experimentation with sounds, and that sound isn't just about that music isn't just about a chord progression, that there are many, many ways of incorporating
there were
a
lots
variety
of non-musical
of sounds. Right, right.
In
absolutely.
Mercury Rev, yes.
Yeah.
And what would you describe your work since then? You're mostly teaching, or you're performing too, and you're doing all kinds of installations. How would you describe for listeners that are unfamiliar with Suzanne Thorpe, who we're talking to, who's putting together this show September 30th at Manitoga, which is in Westchester County?
Yeah, Garrison, New York.
Garrison,
actually.
So, how would you describe your body of work since then?
Well, I've done a combination of activities, one of which is creative improvisation. That's a realm that I've really expanded in since leaving Mercury Rev in the performative world. And in terms of composition, I have worked mostly with sound installation since leaving Mercury Rev. And the sound installation also has characteristics of improvisation in them. Almost all of my sound installations have components that are real-time generative and generate opportunities for interaction with environment in some form or fashion.
And I guess in this case, too, you have to be open for a little improvisation if you're working with nature, which you can't control.
No, it's very frustrating.
So you might have a windy day, for instance.
I could have a windy day, yes.
And that would be very different than, I guess, a calm, sunny day.
Yep. One has to be prepared in any circumstance. And it really, really, really challenges the ego and the sense of, you know, composer as controller, right? You know, this situating that I've put myself in. And I think that anyone that works in this way is involved in a bit of a pilgrimage, shall we say, in wrestling with these ideas of control and when, you know, how to turn it over, right? That we actually don't have control, that we're interacting. We're not just actors, we are interacting.
Excuse me. Can you take us through the experience of this event? People arrive and then they get taken on walks by was the term you used for
a sound walk?
But for the people, the facilitators, I guess.
Sound walk leaders.
The sound walk leaders.
Yes.
They're going to take them on the same walk, or are there different walks?
There's different walks. So there will be three different walks. And so we'll split people up into the three different walks when they arrive, and then the walk will segue into the performance. I think of the whole thing as the performance. I think of the sound walk actually as we could, if we're to use sonata form, as my prelude. Okay. And it's also an opportunity for participants to tune themselves to the environment, right? We have to take a minute and get attenuated. Whenever we make any transition from point A to point B, we have to take some time to get attenuated. And this is that opportunity. So again, I think of this as the prelude, right? That the listening, it tunes our attention, brings it to the listening, and then the listening brings our attention to the fact that we are actually musicking with our environment. And then hopefully that attention will expand to include the musicking of the recorder players into the pool.
And I wasn't sure about this before. They are improvising or is it a composition?
There are some parts that are fixed, meaning it's a very loosely fixed composition. So they will be improvising on a certain set of parameters. And those parameters, the performers will be gauging when to enact those gestures with the space and with each other. So they'll be determining when to be doing that.
What was most surprising during the listening period when you before as you were setting this up or thinking about it? What was the most surprising thing you heard or information that you gathered by listening?
I was surprised by how loud the environment is. And I don't mean from man-made sound. I was surprised how dense, like you were saying, this time of year is incredibly dense. It is incredibly loud. And it is a very powerful soundscape. And I was very surprised by that, how thick the sound was.
And you're only listening to a sliver of the sounds. You know, you don't hear the underwater sounds. You
right.
don't hear the insects
well,
that make...
I don't hear the insects
the
that are...
The super small insects
right,
that, are,
right.
that make loud noises, but they're so small that it's not loud for us or whatever.
Right. But I would pick up some of that, actually. And that some of that I really loved. Those were some of my favorite sounds that I heard when I would work with the recordings. That was part of my process as I took the field recordings. I spent a few weeks walking the property and listening in the property, like I said. But at the same time, I took recordings and played them with me for the past year, and as I was constructing the piece. And there would be these, as you said, small moments where a bee would come by or a frog would jump out of the pond.
And do a solo.
Yeah, right. And you'd be like, oh, where'd that come from? And you could hear the whole envelope of the sound so clearly, really beautifully. And I loved how that sound would arise out of the chorus, though, right? Like you said, it would kind of just be this moment of soloing, and then it would the fade, right? Fade in with the chorus, which is really, really gorgeous.
And the quarry is just such a magical place. I mean, a lot of people probably from their youth have go back to the recorder. They played the recorder in their youth, and maybe in their youth they swam in a quarry.
Yeah.
Quarry, and probably one of the things that is magical about a quarry that people don't realize is probably the sound.
Mm-hmm.
When you're in it, it's a strange, like, echoey, I guess they're all different, but what does this one sound like?
This one is echoey. It may not be quite as echoey as some quarries that may not be as forested, right? So part of the restoration was actually encouraging forest growth again. So this one has a lot of fern cover on the bottom and then tree cover on the top. So it's not quite as reverberant as, for instance, I've been to a couple of different quarries in this area that, like I said, don't have the same covering. And they're a little bit more reverberant.
In New Hampshire or something where they have concerts there and it's very bare, I believe. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So that would be a different experience as well. But I don't know if they have a pool. So that's another element that we're dealing with. So And like you said, the time of year too, that's interesting. If I had to do it this time of year, because if I had done it any earlier, the stream is really loud. We wouldn't have the same effect.
And maybe if it rains all week before, you'd have that too. But
we sure would.
It's not supposed to rain at all this week, I don't think, right?
I don't. There's 2 days of possibility.
Unless the hurricanes come, right?
Right, yeah. My friends, Jose and Maria, may come visit, but...
And I think Kate or something is behind too, right?
Really?
There's always
I haven't
one.
Heard about Kate yet.
I don't
yet,
know if it's
so.
Kate or Kathy or, okay. or Kent.
Okay. I don't know.
That was a question I was going to ask, and you probably don't have the answer to this, but over the years of doing interacting with nature sounds, have you heard a change in the environment just through listening? It's probably too subtle to notice, if there is any. I mean,
well, I'd say the specific pieces that I've been working on haven't been focused on illuminating that type of assessment. I have noticed that in certain places that I've lived, that those changes have happened, or certain places that I have spent time at since I was a kid, I notice that certain sounds are much more prevalent. And I'd say if people are interested in that type of environmental impact on sounds, to research Bernie Krause, who does fantastic work on recording soundscapes and analyzing them for what is missing. And he has been able to identify specific species, not just the frequencies, but and therefore the species that are disappearing from places because of human activity, as in response to human activity, right? So he's somebody that's fantastic.
Tracking if there's less prominent bee sounds because there's less bees, or
right. That would be an example. I don't know that he's specifically tracking bees, but he would.
Right, I'm just, yeah.
Yeah. He has a very interesting talk. I think it's a TED talk, actually, that exemplifies his research very well, where he conducted field recordings in a area, I think it's in Oregon, it's a northern west coast, that was being logged, forested. And the way the foresting company presented it to the community was, well, we're going to do this form of foresting that only takes every other tree or every few trees, so you won't see any difference in the landscape. And the community was like, okay, you know, as long as we don't have these big gaping holes, it seemed like a more acceptable solution. And he was able to discern that even though we couldn't see the difference, we could hear the difference, that there was an entire frequency range that disappeared after the form of foresting happened. So point being is that, you know, our auditory sense is able to pick out information perhaps that our visual senses can't.
And sometimes our conservation methods may be at odds with each other.
Yeah. So, well, we're not getting the full picture, forgive the, reference. But, you know, to get the full picture, then we have to analyze the full spectrum of sensory perception.
What man-made sounds will people hear if they go on the walk or at the quarry?
Probably planes, trucks, trains. Definitely.
The
transportation system. And they're beautiful, though. They're not, they have a certain beauty to them, again, in their envelope, which does blend into the environment. If you're to listen to the sounds themselves at the distance that we're listening to them, they do have a certain aesthetic pleasantness.
Yeah,
to them,
I like the sound of the small propeller plane with the cicadas in the fall. I mean, not jets or anything, but the smaller planes around here we get sometimes, and I like that sound for some reason.
I think that I'm not looking I'm not trying to advocate for some sort of romantic notion of pristineness, you know, like the man's part of the landscape. You know, we are nature, and we are naturing, and part of our naturing is making stuff, and some of the stuff that we make is going to be there. So
it's different, though. Like 100 years ago, the man-made sounds might not have been transportation. They might have been church bells and neighboring farmers banging on things or something.
Right. The transportation, the sound of engines of the industrial world has increased exponentially with the mechanics and the power of that industrial world, right? So it's fair to assess the impacts, to notice that the impact is equivalent with, in some cases, with the sound production. In some cases, you know, there's also, I think, you know, many man-made products that don't have a sonic, as much of a sonic impact, that also have quite a large impact on our environment as well.
So I guess I was asking these questions to get to this question, which is, what do you kind of want people to think about as they're walking, listening, and looking? Or do you want people to think about certain things?
I want people to experience. That's my biggest wish, is that people experience the place and their themselves in the place and their relationships, what they feel when they are traversing this particular landscape, and as they're listening, how their listening can expand their relationship with the place. That's really what I would like people to do.
And why don't you again give some of the details? It's Saturday, September 30th?
Correct. Saturday, September 30th at 3 p.m. at Manitoga. And those that are interested can get more information at, I think it's visitmanitoga.com?
.org.
.org. Visitmanitoga.org.
And does the sound walk have a name, or is it a sound walk? What are you calling the event?
The event is called Resonance and Resemblance.
And so it's more than a sound walk.
Resonance and Resemblance is a sonic meditation composed for Manitoga, which is the woodland estate of Russell Wright.
And are you recording the performances, or are you recording natural sounds, and is this going to be a release later or something? Or
I don't know if it will have a life later. If it has a life later, it may be in another iteration of the performance. This is, so far how I'm thinking about this, is a real-time activity, but we will be documenting it and recording it, and we'll see what comes out of that.
And what other projects are you working on or in the pipe? Are you rushing back to San Diego after this, or are you going to stick around in the Hudson Valley a little longer?
I'm in the Hudson Valley for a few more months. I'm teaching up at Bennington College, visiting faculty this fall, and then I return to San Diego to complete my PhD. And in between there, probably my attention will be focused on my organization, Techne, which is an organization that introduces girls to technology through electronic music. So that my energy will turn towards that.
You've had events in the Hudson Valley before with Techne or not?
I don't think we've done anything in the Hudson Valley. You know, we tend to travel to different girls' rock camps in the country, and we choose a territory and conduct workshops within that area. And we have yet to come to the Hudson Valley.
I thought there was a Hudson Valley girls' rock camp a number of years ago. I don't remember one recently.
I haven't found one. So if there is one, I would love to hear from them.
But maybe I'm mixing it up with your involvement and thinking that there was one here because you were involved elsewhere.
Possibly. That's very possible.
And why is that important to you?
Why is that important to me? Because I think that the technology that we have in the world is skewed to reflect the people that make that technology. And if there isn't enough diversity behind who is making that technology, and there isn't enough diversity of experience, then that technology is going to be limited in how it interacts with the world and how we imagine what that technology can be. And I think that we can do better. We can do better in the development of our technology, in the responsibility that we accept and take for our technology. And that only comes from a wider diversity of involvement and engagement in who is developing it. So that's why it's important. And we need more women and more people of color at the table in the building of our world.
And when specifically, how about in electronic experimental music, art, experimental sound art? Mm. Is that still a problem there too?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, you know.
I think it just has to be said out loud sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've made a lot of progress, I think, and we're seeing more diversity. We have a lot more progress to make.
excuse me. So we're talking to Suzanne Thorpe about the Manitoga performance and listening experience, I guess, Saturday, September 30th at 3 p.m. And you need to go to the website to make reservations. That's what you said?
Information is on the website, and they could also call Manitoga as well. And I believe that information can be gathered there.
And that's down in Garrison in Westchester County. Anything else we should mention about the show or about anything else while you're here?
Please, if you do plan to attend, wear attire that is appropriate for being outside for a few
whatever
hours,
whatever weather conditions happen,
and for walking.
Because so, how long will they be walking?
About 20 minutes. So, yeah, it's
and
a nice,
what's
nice
the,
healthy
is
little.
Is it a hike uphill or is it a flat? Or?
No. So there is a little bit of hilliness to it. So it's not the most even terrain. So it's not a paved kind walk, you know.
But somebody with a limp can deal with it. It's not a.
I think that's it's not a rigorous hike. It's a pretty kind, gentle hike, but it's also not like a paved flat.
It's a wilderness experience,
yes.
More than a. Yeah. Suburban experience.
Yeah. Yeah, so people should be prepared.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being here today and telling us all about it. We hope, wish you luck and hope the hurricanes stay away.
Yeah, me too. That's all. Yeah. Well, that'll be a whole nother environmental contemplation and turning it over. So maybe that'll be my mecca.
All right. We'll go out with Mercury Rev's Opus 40.
She tossed all night like a raging sea, woke up and climbed from the suicide machine. With her Spanish candles and her Persian poles, stuck on the rocks inside Opus 40 stone. Scratching her wrists in the pouring rain, she collapses down upon the ocean floor. Again. Tears in waves, minds on fire. Lights alone by your side. Catskill Mansions.